Good afternoon and welcome to this webinar on the Church on Call, accompanying parishioners through phone calls during times of separation. My name is Jonathan Sitko. I'm the Assistant Director of Programs for the Catholic Apostolate Center, and I'll be helping with some of the technical issues on the webinar. A couple of things to note, there is a chat feature and a question tab in this for this webinar that the presenters will be doing a question and answer at the end. So feel free while this presentation is going on to ask any questions you might have. On my part, I will be handing this off to Jonathan Lewis, Assistant Secretary for Pastoral or Assistant Secretary for Pastoral Ministry and Social Concerns for the Archdiocese of Washington. Thank you.
Thank you, John, and thank you to the Catholic Apostolate Center for co-hosting this webinar with us in the Archdiocese of Washington. As Jonathan said, my name is Jonathan Lewis, and I'm very privileged today to have two of our wonderful parish leaders in the Archdiocese of Washington, Father Ken Gill and Ashley Click, be with us to share some of their best practices of parish leaders in the field doing personal accompaniment through phone call outreach. And so as we begin today, I just want to share maybe a bit of an overview or some of the goals for the conversation. First is to better understand why this personal outreach is important. The second is to share best practices in this personal outreach through Father Ken and Ashley's experience. And third, to walk step-by-step through how you as a parish leader or volunteer can reach out over these coming weeks in this elongated time of separation. But first, Ashley and Father Ken, would you just introduce yourselves and share what roles you play and what parishes you're at here in the Archdiocese of Washington?
Ashley, if you'd like to go first.
Thank you, Father. I'm Ashley Click. I'm a pastoral associate for social justice at Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Washington, D.C. in Georgetown. And our social ministry focuses mainly on migrant and refugee issues, homelessness and poverty, and the climate. So, and we've tackled COVID outreach as well now.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Father Ken Gill. I'm the pastor at Our Lady Star of the Sea in beautiful and historic Solomons, Maryland. We have in our parish here about 1,200 families, give or take. And we also have a school. I've been immersed with my staff since the early days of March, managing through this process, not only here in the parish, but with our school and the broader community at large as well. So Jonathan, thank you for the invitation. Very happy to be here with you today.
Well, thanks again to both of you. It's nice that we have both an urban parish experience in Holy Trinity in downtown Washington, D.C., as well as a more rural experience in beautiful Solomons Island with you, Father Ken. This is certainly not a style of ministry that only fits one particular parish size or parish life. And I think that's one of the beauties of this personal outreach is it might look different in our different parish settings, but it's something that can be sort of a spirit of all the work we do, no matter our parish situation or even our role in our parish as clergy or lay. This theme of personal outreach through phone calls struck me, and as I had seen many of our parishes doing similar types of outreach. And I sort of put a post that you can see on Twitter and on the screen asking, you know, we've seen a lot of live stream masses, but, you know, reaching out to a lot of the people I engage with on Twitter, who many of whom work in ministry, saying, have you had someone reach out to you, the pastor or parish staff person, have they called you personally besides just seeing, you know, live streamed prayer and events? And as you can see, you know, 3/4 of folks said no, they've had no personal outreach to them during this time. And that sort of struck me as something that maybe is a missed opportunity or an underserved opportunity in the life of our church. I know that it's not as common in the 21st century to do some of this phone call outreach. You know, the joke is that iPhones are still phones and can be used for things besides texting or sending gifts or being on social media. We don't make phone calls as much anymore as people used to. I'm reminded of when I was growing up in the 90s, where if there was a snow day, there was no website you checked, you were part of a phone tree. And so someone called you and then you were responsible to call 3 or 4 other families to pass on the information that eventually covered the whole of the school, just because everyone played a role in reaching out to someone else. The irony in our time, I think, of church life in America is even though we're way more connected through digital media than we ever have been in the life of the world, young people and elderly and people of all ages really are lonelier than they've ever been before. More people live alone today than at any point in world history. Today, almost a third of Americans live alone, 28%. And so we recognize there's this massive loneliness that people experience that draws us to meet that pastoral need. This fall, this is a picture of a note that a 90-year-old woman slipped under a neighbor's door. It says, "Would you consider to become my friend? I'm 90 years old and I live alone. All my friends have passed away. I'm so lonesome and scared. Please, I pray for someone." I think this loneliness in one way affects those who are aged in a very acute way, but also, ironically, those who are young. 3 in 10 millennials say they always or often feel alone. 22% of those in their 20s and 30s say they have no friends, and 27% say they have no close friends. So, you know, Pope Francis constantly talks about this throwaway culture where people feel set aside, and he always draws the connection between the young and the old as two of those populations that are especially set aside. And I think that's worthy of our consideration and discernment within our own parish ministry of who are those people who live alone? Who are those people who maybe are feeling isolated or lonely? The technological solutions and creative work that parishes have been doing, and I know both Holy Trinity and Our Lady Star of the Sea have done this as well, using technology to share prayer, to share catechesis, to do live streams of the Mass, are all really positive ways in helping people feel a connection with their local parish. But the limitation of that Father Frank Donio of the Catholic Apostles Center noted to me and on a radio show was that all of those are unidirectional. And so they limit the parishioner's ability to engage or to contribute, and they limit the leader, their ability to listen or to learn from the other. And I was really struck by the final document of the Synod on Young People and Vocational Discernment a couple years ago that really honed in on this theme of listening, that listening is an encounter in freedom. It transforms the heart of those who do it. And it's the way that God relates to his people. You know, Jesus asked 3 times more questions in the Gospels than he did give specific answers. That listening is key in our pastoral ministry. And the Synod Fathers say all too often there's a tendency to provide prepackaged answers or ready-made solutions. But instead, we ought to propose this culture of listening that sets the conditions for the preaching of the gospel that can touch the heart in a truly decisive and fruitful way. He says, never has there been so great a need, as today for spiritual guides, for this ministry of accompaniment through one-on-one conversations. So I think it's easy to see that there is such a need for this work to do some one-on-one outreach. And phone calls are certainly one way of doing that, but not the only way. But I think it's valuable for us to break open today, Ashley and Father Ken, what your experiences have been. And so I'm hoping you could share what's been your experience with this personal outreach, and is there maybe a story or experience that bubbles up for you that as a highlight? And Ashley, maybe you can kick us off.
Thanks. So we started our outreach around March 17th, and we're a large parish. We have 5,000 registered parishioners. We also have a school. Our RE class has 600. Our RE program has 600 students. So we started off trying to outreach to approximately 1,588 senior members of our parish. And, you know, we recruited volunteers. We started out with 50. The goal was to try to call 10 to 20 per person. And by the end of it, I probably had 10 really great volunteers who kept saying, yes, let's do it. And I think for us, when Steve, something you said earlier that was interesting, the first week, I would say we left a lot more voicemails than we did actual conversations. And then by the second week, when we were all kind of realizing what our future was going to be together, we did have people answering the phone and we started having more meaningful conversations. And we were able to start building connections. One of our goals, we do utilize technology a lot. We have a daily e-letter that sends out the homilies. We had started using Zoom to create prayer opportunities and gatherings. So we wanted to bring people to our website and to know what these opportunities were. And so we also learned someone who was in the nursing home who was turning 100 years old and her whole family was supposed to be there and she was going to have to celebrate alone. So we reached out and had a lot of the students in our RE program and at school send her birthday cards that week. We had other people who maybe were newly widowed, and we were able to put them in contact with members of our Ignatian Spirituality Program, our men's club. So we tried to use that as a way to really renew connections that they had maybe lost one at Holy Trinity, and then and create new ones. And I think that that's, you know, I made a lot of new friends. And we also used it as a way to help people. And we just got our first request for someone who needed groceries, and we were able to answer that too. So for us, it was just getting connected, and it's been about staying connected once we made that call.
Thank you, Ashley. Father Ken?
Yes, very much in the same way. We too, in early March, recognized that we were going to be in a new reality. And being more of a rural parish, we didn't have necessarily the digital media infrastructure and platforms that were already being used quite frequently. Our demographic here is we have quite a large number of retired folks. We have a fair number of blue collar workers, truck drivers and things like that. And also folks that work across the river at Patuxent Naval Air Station. So kind of a diverse demographic, probably reflective of most of our parishes. But one of the things that I wanted to think about and was praying on most sincerely was, you know, the church being 2,000 years old, we have gone through these kinds of situations before. Even here in Southern Maryland, we had a history from 1700 to 1750, not because of economic or medical crises, but because of a political crisis. Catholicism was suppressed. The practice of the Catholic faith was suppressed for about 50 years. And there are people whose families go back that far and have those roots. So we know that when things happen, and of course we've had plagues and pandemics in Europe and other parts of the world. And one of the things that we know is the resilience of Catholics, most especially when these kinds of things happen. We just don't fold up our tents and say, okay, well, this is the way it's going to be. We're going to go home and we're going to kind of forget about our faith until the crisis has passed. So for myself, I turned to St. Charles Borromeo, who was the Bishop of Milan in Italy during the pandemic of the plague, the Black Plague from 1576 to 1578. And he recognized early on the danger. They had to quarantine. Everybody had to stay at home for a long time in Milan. And he recognized early on the spiritual crisis that could come about when people are away from the sacraments, when the people are away from the customs of our faith, the sacraments, the graces, and the life of prayer and the Mass. And so very quickly, he worked to come up with some ideas, working with priests and others. And of course, we know, and the history books record for us, the many different steps he implemented, including having the Mass celebrated in the streets at the major intersections. People would watch and participate from their houses. So first thing we did was we said, we need to connect virtually. We need to make sure that the Mass is available widely to our community. And in fact, one of the benefits came, we have a parishioner who's on the board of directors up at Calvert Hospital in Prince Frederick. And they said to us, you know, if you can live stream your Mass through YouTube, we can have it on here in the hospital. The patients here in the hospital can watch that. We are able to do that. We've been doing that for about 4 weeks now, along with our Facebook Live. And one of the things that really we decided too was this was going to be a period of great distress. Parents having to work from home, for those who had kids trying to monitor what their kids were doing. So we wanted to have a way to be able to not only to communicate to them, but to hear back from them. What are your needs? What are the things that are working? What are the things that are not working? And then we thought, well, we've got too a lot of widowers and widows and people who live alone. And so early on, we thought that it would be with 1,200 people in the parish, give or take, we could split this up through our parish soft, take the names, get the data dump, split it up among our parish office workers, our deacons and their wives, just split it up, and within a couple of weeks be able to, as from my generation will remember, when we had long distance, reach out and touch someone. Really, that was kind of our motto, reach out and touch someone. And just like Ashley's experience, we were able to connect with people who were so gracious. I walked down the streets, I was in the store earlier today, people are just like, Father, thank you so much for the phone call. Thank you so much for thinking about us. And I just think that is so important, as that image of church as mother, image of church as mother. We talk about it so much. The mother does not abandon her children when a crisis hits. The mother is there and goes above and beyond to protect her children. So I feel very strongly, as do my staff and our whole community, that everything that we're doing is part of this ecosystem through the new digital media reality, and then also using the phone calls and the other things that we're doing, is that we're exercising most profoundly and concretely this reality as church, as mother, making sure that everyone in our community knows that their parish church is here for them, wants to know how they're doing, is willing to go above and beyond to provide for their needs, including helping to go pick up their medicines from the pharmacy, going to the store for those who are afraid to go out and bring them food, and all of the other things. This has just been one of the most tremendous things that's happened to our community in a long time. I think this is one of the benefits God will bring out from this crisis, is stronger parishes, stronger sense of community, because of things like Ashley's parish and ours and all the other parishes who are engaging in these things. So thank you, Jonathan.
Yeah, thank you, Father Ken. I thought maybe we'd take a little bit of a look at some of the resources and step-by-step guides of how to actually do this. You each shared a little bit about your process. What's on the screen now is a resource from the Archdiocese of Washington that can be found at adw.org/coronavirus, all of our coronavirus resources for ministry. And the document is very simple, sort of pulling on the best practices of local parishes to sort of build a call script. So what can we put in the hands of volunteers, deacons, deacon wives, as you said, Father Ken, and many other ministry leaders who aren't really sure what to say or exactly the words. There's can sometimes be a discomfort at what the spiritual writer Sherry Waddell says, breaking this sort of ceiling or breaking the silence in our churches. We're so used to being in ritual that maybe asking people personal questions or reaching out to them personally feels a little intimidating. And so the script is just sort of a tool that can be adapted and edited by individual users or parishioners and parishes to fit your particular community. So starting with how to introduce oneself, you know, how it's distinct if you're leaving a voicemail versus reaching someone live, asking that question of how can the parish support them, giving the space to the person to really to share where they're at. As you had said, Ashley, that maybe early on people were ignoring the call from the number they didn't recognize, but that human desire to reach out and to be connected to one another, more and more people picking up that phone, looking for someone to connect to, people who especially are feeling lonely or isolated physically, spiritually, emotionally. So asking if there's things that they need and making sure that we collect that information from people. And maybe even asking if there's others they need. Maybe we know of a neighbor who's elderly or who's in need. Or maybe some people who experience homeless in the neighborhood that maybe the parish could support. Just helping to raise, increase awareness. And then in terms of how to end the conversation, how to maybe help that person connect if information is being shared on a parish Facebook page or on a parish website, just to let them know about that. I think we all have learned in ministry that you can never over-communicate, because you'll promote for weeks and weeks and weeks, and no matter what, someone will come up to you and say, I didn't know that happened. Nobody told me. And so this is a great moment to one-on-one have those conversations of ways that people can connect. And then finally, to really to be bold in offering prayer, that we know that people are feeling lonely or intimidated or isolated, and to have an opportunity just to pray with someone else. It's at the heart of our faith, as Father Ken was saying, but it's one thing to sort of watch prayer. And I think many of us have watched Mass or watched prayer, and there's a way that we can engage prayerfully. But there's something different about praying from our heart and praying with another person over the phone in a live situation. And so I think there's something powerful too about offering prayer there. And then finally, we had just offered a couple things to consider before you call. So maybe some information that parishioners or parishes should gather to help them form volunteers or to make those calls in terms of what's going to be the system for collecting notes, how are they going to distribute the phone numbers to volunteers, what practical resources does the parish have so that people who are making those calls have the information to share about what's going on in their parish or a neighboring parish to share as well. And then some of those frequently asked questions that we know people are asking time and time again. And again, Father Ken or Ashley, maybe you even have some other FAQs that you learned in the process. But I offer this, not that it's a perfect tool, but certainly something that could be edited or adapted by you and your parish situation as a starting point to encourage you on this pathway. Any initial comments, Father Ken or Ashley, in terms of helping people to make calls or looking at a resource like this?
Ashley, if you'd like to go first.
No, I think we did something similar, I think, to what you and I had talked about before. I think, you know, people don't use the phone a lot. I mean, I think that you were saying that. So it was interesting, too, for the volunteers. It was awkward to leave a voicemail, or they were really excited when someone finally did answer the phone. And even we had a lot of different ages participating, too. And some of the younger adults in our community and teenagers loved when someone actually did answer the phone and they had a conversation. I think for us, you know, and I think we're going to talk about this, we used Google Share with Excel because I had a different ages of volunteers. That was the one platform most people were comfortable with. And that way I could see how the calling was going and if there were any urgent notes that we needed to address as people did make contacts. And if a phone number was bad or an email needed to be changed, you know, we could easily convert that to another file in-house and share it with our group. So that was the tool that was easiest for my community.
Great. Thank you, Ashley. I thought now would be a good opportunity for us to sort of step by step walk through those different elements of making parish calls. And while Father Ken is rejoining us, Ashley, maybe you could kick us off in terms of a couple of these step-by-step processes. So where did you start in the process, especially in terms of identifying the goal of your project, in terms of a population to serve, and then how long of a period of time in terms of the timeline for your call project?
Sure. So we started teleworking on the 14th of March. And so we kind of spent a couple of days of figuring out how we were going to answer questions for our community. We already have a website. We do a weekly e-letter from our community. I have a social justice e-letter that goes out. A lot of the ministries do. And so I first went to my social justice community and had a volunteer form that said, what are you willing to do? Conversation, errands, you know, we're in the DMV, where do you live, what zip code are you in, so that as I gathered this information and if we did need to answer an urgent request or triage something, that I had different people in different zip codes. For Holy Trinity, we have 67 zip codes, so that's, it's a lot. And so, you know, at first I overthought it and thought, oh, I'll try to partner these different groups, and I gave up on that. And we just kind of work through the call, and because I didn't had other volunteers, if someone did have a need, I would be able to make that connection later.
Yeah, I remember one parish saying they had the clever point of, and Holy Trinity certainly is a uniquely widespread parishioner population, but for probably a majority of parishes that are more rooted in particular neighborhoods or towns, to really try mapping volunteers with parishioners, and so you can map parishioners using a database like Google Maps, just copying and pasting as part of a spreadsheet in to see who lives where, and then identify maybe some of your volunteers in that neighborhood. So instead of someone getting a call from someone in a different town or neighborhood or city, we, looking into it, are able to connect people with people who live down the street. So if there were practical considerations or needs of groceries or medicine or something, there are ways that people could be of support more practically. Even dropping off for mailing cards, like you had said.
Right.
I thought that was a neat element too, is always thinking, how can we help connect people locally? And there are great free tools online just to help map to see where the people we're trying to target as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. We didn't have that luxury. But, you know, like I said, we did have one woman who had received a voicemail or phone call who called me late last week and needed groceries. And so I knew her zip code. I was able to go back to my database of volunteers and just send out a call to see who would do it. So it worked out that way, too.
That's great. Ashley, tell me a little bit about who you decided to call. Everyone in the parish, did you start with a particular audience?
No, at the beginning, you know, we all were hearing that it was, you know, coronavirus was having a bigger impact on the elderly population. And so we pulled from our list kind of the 65 plus group, and that was 1,588 records. So wow, that was pretty big to start with. Yeah. So that's how we began. And then, you know, we have a young adult community. They were already having Zoom. They went right to Zoom immediately, right, their prayer outreach. So this community was a little bit harder, and we did have to, the first couple of weeks, I did a lot of Zoom trainings for community members. All of our staff did. How do you use Zoom? We made some, you know, resources like you have for the script. And so we did keep calling. We did it in 2 weeks. And the goal was just to keep pushing people to connect through the Zoom gatherings and the e-letter.
Great. Thank you. Father Ken, how did you identify the population of people you were going to call? Did you call everyone in the parish or have a priority of we're going to start with this group?
Yeah, so basically we just did a download out of the parish soft system, which gave us about 1,200 names and numbers. We came up with just a very simple script. One of the things I wanted people to do was for it to be very natural for them, right? Just to have a natural conversation, not to have it like be a telemarketer or something like right, that, right? Because we're selling anything. And basically, we just had a couple of bullet points. I wish I would have had the wonderful archdiocesan phone call script, but we didn't. And so just working from my own professional background and experience, you know, basically, we just, you know, people identified themselves, said, hi, I'm calling on behalf of Father Ken and the parish to check in and see how you're doing, right? Very simple, very natural. And then, you know, we did have some sample questions for different kinds of categories for folks who are living alone or widowers or widows or elderly, just checking in if they needed any food supplies or prescriptions. And, you know, did they need anything done around the house? We had one gentleman who had a whole bunch of stuff that he needed moved around the house. So we were able to help him with that. One of the things we started very early on was a holy hour that we live streamed at 12 o'clock right here from this historic church every day where we do our live stream of our mass. And one of the things we did was create a form on our website and our Facebook page so people can put in their intentions that they would like to have prayed for during that holy hour. So we would also ask people, because we knew a lot of our elderly folks really have no technology or not really experienced with it, we would ask them, hey, do you have any intentions you'd like Father Ken to pray for during the holy hours? And then we use Flocknote. We've been using Flocknote since last summer when I arrived here. And so we just asked them, you know, are they getting the updates via the Flocknote? And if not, you know, we give them the information so they can use their cell phone if they want or their computer. And also the other thing we have, and we would especially mention this to the parents who have children, we have an account with Formed. We're huge fans of Formed. And so we wanted to make sure that everybody had our parish account number so that they could freely access all the wonderful content there. And then we would also just remind folks of the live streaming schedule. We also, during Lent, we're doing Stations of the Cross and then also the YouTube. And then also, if they were on Faith Direct, this was very important.
I think we may have lost Father Ken for a second with the internet there. Ashley, if you can jump in while we wait for Father Ken to rejoin us. He was sharing about some of the opportunities that he had to connect people in the rest of the parish. I know when you would share with me when we first talked, you have a daily or weekly communication that goes out from the parish. And you had increase in subscribers because of this phone call outreach, right?
Yes. So we had a weekly e-letter that went out. We started doing daily homily. Each of the priests are taking turns recording audio homilies. And then we are also having almost daily opportunities to gather through Zoom. All the ministries are utilizing Zoom. And so from the e-letter, I think we've added over 700 names in the past month. So wow. That's a major way that we are communicating. And we are continuing to offer as much of our programming that we could, you know, online now, virtually.
What I appreciate about that so much is that sometimes people think a personal relational ministry and events or gathered event programming are in competition, that you're either doing programs or you're focused on relationships with people. But I think it kind of works like 2 feet walking together, that our personal outreach ought to draw more people into the life and ministries of our parish, where people are deepening their relationship and have a desire to go out and to invite more people back in. And so sort of like the 2 feet of service and charity, service and justice, these 2 feet of programs and people, and that we sometimes I think we hobble along on the 1 foot of programs, but doing this personal outreach can lead to great fruit of connecting more people into the programmatic ministerial life of a particular parish as well.
Right, I agree. You know, and it's been nice with such a huge parish. There are a lot of people I don't see. I go to the 9 o'clock mass. So if you don't go to 9 o'clock, I may not know who you are unless you're active in social justice. So it's been nice on these Zoom prayers and gatherings, especially, you know, last week, to see the faces that I talked to or that I've been corresponding with. So it really has been a consolation for me. And I think for a lot of people to see this witness and to see people gather in this way.
Absolutely. Can you tell a little bit about how you gather and train volunteers? You mentioned that kind of at the beginning, but maybe walk through if a parish leader is thinking about organizing something like this, maybe they have questions about confidentiality or who to invite even for something like this, because obviously it's no one's job at a parish to do this sort of personal outreach and ministry. What insights do you have and what guidelines did you sort of use?
So we had a script like you had here. We had another kind of guideline that said, you know, don't ask people if they're sick. Don't ask those kind of questions, similar to what Father Ken. It really was just a call to say hello and to let you know that we were thinking about you and to see if there were needs that we could to address or communicate back to our team. I did have a Zoom training. It was optional so that people who wanted to get on the phone with me and ask questions could, or if they weren't familiar with Google Docs or things like that, we could kind of work through that. And then it just kind of naturally, people who enjoy doing it kept coming back saying, give me another 20 names. And those, you know, out of the 50 people, I had more people offer to do it, but 50 was definitely the cap of me trying to manage the different spreadsheets and who was making it work or not. And then I had probably at the end had 10 people who just were machines. Give me another 20. So, you know, that model worked for us.
What are some of the qualities that you would look for in a person doing this sort of a phone call accompaniment or this sort of ministry?
You know, I didn't have any, you know, you just had to have a desire to be able to talk mm-hmm. to someone if they actually did answer the phone. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, these were people who, there was a big age. I didn't think I had a lot of people kind of parents weren't volunteering to do this. It was more kind of seniors who were actually the people we were reaching out to, too.
Right.
And then, young adults and teenagers who, you know, found themselves home from school and wanted to do that. I think, you know, it would help to know what was happening at the parish. And, you know, that was part of our training is that this mm-hmm. is where we want people to go. And that was it. I think you just have to have a desire to want to reach out.
Yeah, I love the importance of desire. I love what Father Ken said too about just the virtue of naturalness. You know, a lot of theologians talk about that as a virtue, how we be natural in the world and engage people. And to your point that I think is so well taken of really protecting privacy, that sometimes people have such a desire to help that maybe they cross into conversations or areas that maybe aren't as appropriate for the particular ministry. And so having a really healthy sense of boundaries, you know, we're not social workers. This isn't time for you to virtually hear someone's confession, right? That's not you. That's not what your job is. That's not allowed. But here's what we can do, right? And knowing that and being sort of equipped with what our role is can be really liberating.
Yeah, and I mean, it was good. My volunteers took copious notes. So they put notes if they had a communication or if they were worried about somebody that maybe needed to be followed up with, or if they thought it would benefit for a member of our Ignatian spirituality team or a priest to call them, or maybe they would benefit from a card if we wanted, we had a homebound ministry that now that we're all homebound, I can just keep adding names of people who were alone and maybe would appreciate a cheerful card, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Can you talk a little bit about how you collected that data? So you have these 50 volunteers, maybe a core 10 or so, taking all these notes. How did you gather that info if someone didn't need, a birthday card or help with groceries or even a prayer intention?
Right. So everybody had their own Google folder and, that's how I kept populating. I had a master list and I would just do it in chunks to their group. And then, at the end of the day, they would either email me if they were really concerned about somebody, but I would go back in, and especially that was how I captured data that someone's number was wrong or we needed to, or a lot of people wanted us to subscribe them to the e-letter. So I would gather that information kind of at the end of the day too. So I just would go through the Google, the docs.
Absolutely. I just got a text from Father Ken. He said they're having Comcast issues down in their county. And so keeps getting kind of kicked off and offers his apologies. But we're so grateful for his contributions to this point. So I love, Ashley, your point of, either sending something directly via email or text to you as a coordinator of a program, or thinking creatively about using some free resources like a Google Drive, where you could create a Google Sheet or even a Google Form as a leader and people could fill in, even if it's just a couple questions of the name of the person and is there anything they need, then that could all be delivered via email to that coordinator to simplify a process working with a lot of volunteers. There's lots of free tutorials on how to set up forms like that as well. If you're in the Archdiocese of Washington, you should feel free to reach out to us at the Archdiocese Pastoral Center, and we'd be happy to work with you to sort of set up some of those free tools, because it just can make things a lot easier, like you're describing.
Yeah, for sure.
And then can you share finally, so you gathered this information, did you find that you had more work at the end than you did at the beginning with some of the follow-ups of either adding information these daily communications from the parish or updating people's parish information, address, emails,
etc.? It's a lot of work. It's definitely something if you begin this task, you need to see it through. People are relying on us then to add them to the e-letter. Or, if people ask you to do things, then you need to be able to follow through. I wouldn't say it was meaningful work. We wanted people to connect with us. So we wanted them to be able to get the e-letter. We wanted them to know that they could still hear from their priests. We wanted them to know that they could still pray morning prayer on Mondays with David. So it was important. And so it was a priority for our community. At the time, it didn't seem like a lot of work. I was actually glad to have the distraction to keep doing something when I was worried about what was happening around in the world. So it was meaningful for us. I'm glad that we did it. And I know that the volunteers who did it had a lot of meaningful experiences too.
That's great. What would be sort of your pitch to a parish leader who's saying, Ashley, this sounds great. Jonathan, this is a nice idea, but I'm busy here. We've still got a lot of things going on. Why should someone prioritize this sort of one-on-one outreach when it takes a long time? It's not very efficient. In a typical way, it's easier just to post that information on a Facebook page or web page.
I think it's more important than ever to have these connections. I keep saying that word and that's what it is. And, I still have some of the volunteers who are alone call me. And I know that one just had her great nephew, Cal, was born and he was in the hospital and we were all praying for him. These are life changing experiences. So is it a lot of work? Yes. But if you're working in the parish, this is kind of your job. And I think the world is changing and the way we communicate and connect is going to be different on the other side of this. And it's important to kind of keep building the foundation for whatever that may be on the other side, whether it is more virtual opportunities or and getting your parishioners and your community comfortable with that. And then having them be able to reach out to each other like this. We're kind of learning how we should use this information and now that people are using their phones for more things than texting and emails? What does that look like? I mean, I think for us, and not to keep saying Zoom, but that is a way that you can see each other, you know, and people who, you know, we have a group that would meet at the coffee shop every Saturday morning. And after they went to morning mass with one of the priests, and they were really hungry to gather and to keep that going and to invite more people into that. So we just tried to facilitate that. So it's worth doing. You know, we learned a lot of that the phone numbers don't work. We had to do some email outreach on that, and that's helpful too. So,
yeah, I think that last point's a really great one. I think as in the Catholic Church in general, we're a little bit poor when it comes to data management. You know, in a typical parishioner situation, probably like myself, we register at a prayer parish, we sign up for maybe for Faith Direct or for online giving through some platform, and then it's sort of set it and forget it, right? You know, not every parish has a daily communication that's seeing what emails are bouncing, you know, and ideally going that extra step, right, of when an email bounces, checking the record and saying, oh, they're still an active parishioner, but their emails must have changed. Let's follow up and see if we can get an updated one. That behind the scenes sort of slow work can seem really administrative or maybe, grunge work, things like that. But when it really opens up these pathways of rich friendship and relationship, not only in times of social distancing, but in general, that you can't love whom you don't know. And sometimes when we have thousands of people in our parishes on Sundays or on our parish rolls, knowing people means having updated data to be able to have an initial outreach or a longer term outreach.
Right. And people, you know, I think a lot of people, even the target group we were calling, have no longer had landlines. These lines didn't work. They all use their cell phone now. We learned a lot about that, and then can update that record and then reach out via email too. So we did do some follow-up if we couldn't get people by email that just said, we're checking on you, and gave them the links to the website too.
Mm-hmm. And I was talking to one parish leader who was saying, they use their parish database, like a parish soft, for information, but it was actually their online giving database and company that had more updated information, because it's something that gets checked a bit more regularly in terms of statements being sent or sending emails about maybe monthly tithe, et cetera. And so sort of helpful to look at maybe a religious ed or Catholic school database, a parish database, financial giving, that if we can find a way to connect these in some way or to cross-reference them to make sure we just have the most up-to-date and accurate information. Not because we care about data, not because we're selling people's data, but because we want to reach out and we believe in the dignity of each human person, which starts with having the ability to make a phone call to reach out to them.
Absolutely.
Well, Ashley, thank you so much. And thanks as well to Father Ken for sharing so many of their tips and best practices. I know there's some questions, and I think John Sitko is going to rejoin us and maybe help share some of those questions with us that people had. And I just want to thank Father Frank Donio, John Sitko, and the Catholic Apostolate Center staff, again, for co-hosting this webinar. It's great just to be able to very kind of quickly after Easter jump on and have a quick conversation. Ashley, like you said, I think this time teaches us that Zoom and platforms like this just can be really helpful to connect in ways that maybe we wouldn't have as quickly before.
Great.
So there are actually a number of questions. So I'll start off with our earliest question from Colleen. To care for our young adults / college students, et cetera, do you recommend reaching out via text, social media, or other ways of contact? Why or why not?
So we do have, we have a youth minister who uses the text too. I mean, and the callers would do that too. They would send text or email versus that. I think if you know your community and who you're calling, that can help. So we had a very specific targeted outreach initially, and they were probably not going to be texters receiving text. So that didn't work for us, but I think any data you have, you should utilize. Our young adult community uses text and Facebook and communicate that way.
Yeah, I think sort of an all hands on deck approach tends to be a positive one. And also knowing your people, like you said, Ashley, I mean, it's helpful also to know what are the policies of a local parish or guidelines of a diocese in terms of what the best ways are to communicate, especially communicating with minors. With college students or young adults, I sort of would defer to the people on the ground, because I think in certain communities and certain ethnic communities as well, certain forms of communication work better. I know that I really enjoy getting things via text message a bit more. or like group chat. So I'm on one chat stream with some people in different countries through WhatsApp. And that works for me. It works for us to share pictures, to share short videos and things like that. I know apps like Marco Polo are similarly popular, share short videos as well. But maybe offering something in a couple different platforms. I think that's why tools like Flocknote can be really helpful, because participants can self-select if they want to receive something via email or if they prefer to receive a text as well.
Cindy asks, for those of who are currently doing this, are you calling parishioners on a regular basis, checking in once a week, or asking if they'd like a call on a regular basis? This actually came up in a couple different spots. After you do it sort of once, what's the next step in terms of this?
So for us, if it was someone that they identified may need another callback, then we've all kind of, you know, assigned those out to the community. You know, our invitation was to join our e-letter, which is the daily way we're communicating what's happening, and to invite them in that regard. And then we also added some people to our homebound ministry list so that they were getting cards and encouragement from the students or whomever wanted to be part of that. So we were anybody who was ill, who identified themselves as ill or was alone and wanted to hear back, we did continue to add them to the list. We, you know, we have our various ministry leaders who have been working. RE reaches out to their community of students, and then our school has a rich, you know, they're all doing cyber school and communicating that way. You know, we've talked about how do we want to use this now that this first group of volunteers has had a break. You know, can we invite them back to start calling some more parishioners and just keep checking in? So I think it's something we're going to continue to do, not necessarily with the ones we already called, but, you know, just to keep trying to hit as many people as we can.
Ashley, I loved that a part of your calls, even though they were sort of one-off calls, was to be connecting people, and same with Father Ken, connecting people into the ongoing daily stream of parish life. And so even though it's probably not possible to call thousands of people every week or every couple of weeks, maybe it's only possible to reach out to people once or twice maybe, but that invitation is connecting people into community. And so maybe a parish's follow-up question is, what are those opportunities for community that exist in the life of a parish? Are there small groups that are doing formation using an online formation tool, maybe like Father Ken mentioned? Are there Bible studies virtually going on? You mentioned a women's group that had popped up and started during this time, right? Correct. And so I think, again, this is a great example of how personal outreach always has to blend and connect to parish programs and initiatives, because at some point we have to invite people to something. And so what is it we have to invite people to? Certainly making phone calls isn't the end of the road. You know, it's really just the beginning. And I think too, in a particular way, we haven't talked as much about the evangelizing potential of this, but I think we know that, you know, in many dioceses across this country, Catholics are leaving the church of every age group, especially among the young. But, you know, if you have a parish database that shows that many people haven't been active in the last couple of years, maybe it's a chance to reach out to those people and to say, we just miss you, or just wanted to see how you're doing. And maybe because, again, people are more busy than bad. And so maybe people have just kind of felt disconnected. Studies show that people don't leave the church like they're slamming the door on the face of the church. They just kind of drift away slowly. And this might be a great chance to sort of be a lifeguard and to throw, you know, a life preserver out to folks just by caring. And at the end of the day, even if they're not going to reengage, if people can say that the Catholic Church is a community that's reached out to me personally, that carries a lot of weight with people's hearts.
I agree. And we have programming for all ages too, and we've kept it really simple. I don't want people to think that we have like these elaborate webinars and things like that. That's not happening. They're really prayer gatherings. Our youth minister does something on Wednesdays for teenagers where they write, they reflect, and they pray together. It's called Raps. She's trying to do like a Netflix movie night on Friday. So, you know, the young adults are still gathering in the way they always did on Thursday. Our men's group meets on Saturday morning. A lot of these things are already happening. We've just kind of made them possible virtually so that they can continue. And we have invited a lot of new people in. So it's been impactful.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, as John has up on the screen, a next conversation or webinar on ministry during this time, I think that is a great point to continue to take up and reflect on, is how are we accompanying people in this digital environment through phone calls, certainly, but then in those ongoing ways, like you're mentioning, Ashley, I think there are some great opportunities for parishes to think in new ways or to take some of the things they've already been doing and take them online, as you have.
Couple more questions. Father Frank asks, what are some key things that you are going that you have learned to take into pastoral care beyond this time?
You know, we talked about this today at a staff meeting. You know, we have a homebound ministry that really was just for the sick people that who couldn't come to Mass. But in doing the calls that I made and people I talked to, again, with the 67 zip codes, we have a lot of aging population who can't get to Georgetown anymore and who really missed Holy Trinity. They missed coming to Mass. And so it's challenging me and how we are going to continue to keep this group engaged, you know, on the other side of this when we can gather again. We don't want to have invited them in virtually and then not continue this somehow. So for us, that's one way, is just how do we keep this this going for people who can't come in or who are scared to go out? I mean, I think it's not going to just turn off all of a sudden.
I think the thing that strikes me is how important the one-on-one ministry is, and that when I get really busy, even working in a diocesan role, not having the privilege at this point to work in a parish hands-on, sometimes the first thing to go is that one-on-one, because you're so focused on programs and projects and initiatives. And as you step back, you realize sometimes we create things for nobody because maybe we're not responding to people's needs. And so I think to always keep that question in mind of who have I reached out to personally. If we ever are hosting a gathering or event or a ministry and we haven't made a personal phone call or text or email, not a big email dump to 400 people, but a personal email to invite someone, we're missing something. I think that's probably pretty essential. And certainly is the Jesus method. You know, Jesus called people by name. He called people one-on-one and he invited them to walk with him. And that doesn't grow stale.
Something you said earlier at the beginning, listening. I mean, I'm really using this time to listen. You know, like you said, we have a lot of programs. We do a lot of things. What do people need? You know, we're asking and trying to really listen to how we can accompany them during this time. And what will that look like going forward?
One of the last questions we have is from Molly. What encouragement do you have for parishes who have had to recently furlough staff and feel overwhelmed by starting a project like this?
I totally feel your pain. I mean, we had that conversation too. I think, you know, I would engage in volunteers. I mean, that really is that, you know, they are your parish and that's your church. And hopefully you can leverage that. And I don't think, I mean, just manage what you can. Like, I would just encourage you not to, I mean, I couldn't believe when we had to call 1,588 people. I was like, oh no, what did I didn't think it was going to be that big a number. So maybe you could start with a zip code, or maybe you could start smaller, you know, and just do it in manageable chunks. I think that's what you need to, we all have these lofty ambitions. I certainly did at the beginning, and I realized that I didn't want to have this many volunteers and I didn't need that many volunteers. And, you know, you can still have an impact without it being a huge effort project too. I think just do what you can and invite people to volunteer. I think we also have that tendency to rely on the same people. There are a lot of names that volunteered that I didn't know. And I kind of took a leap of faith that they were going to be great volunteers, even if I hadn't encountered them in my own ministry, and they were. And so I've grown my volunteer list exponentially too. So just welcoming people to help you.
It's great.
That appears to be it for questions. So do you guys have any closing thoughts you'd like to give to the group here?
I'm grateful for you guys to have me. You know, it was funny to be asked to be a part of this. We were just doing what we needed to do for our community. And I'm grateful all the resources that the ADW has provided. We've certainly utilized them. And thank you for all of your hard work. And I'm happy to, you know, you can share my information if people want more details on how we did it or what we are doing for the community too. But thank you, everybody. And I'm glad to walk this journey with you.
Thank you, Ashley. I think my closing thoughts are just how important this time is, that we're really in a privileged time. You know, Father Ken had talked about different moments of history and sort of how, you know, in every generation, God raises up saints to do not necessarily, you know, big extraordinary projects, but small things with great love. And I think this personal outreach is certainly a lesson in small, doing small things with great love. And it's not possible to do everything. I am always struck by that prayer called the long view, right? We're workers, not master builders. We can't do everything, but it means we can do something and do it very well. And that there's a sense of liberation in that. And I really try to hang my hat on that piece of it, that we can't do everything. You might not be able to call everyone. I know that parish staffs and pastors especially are just stretched so thin trying to manage properties and offer liturgies and do prayer and do outreach. There is too much to do, but there is a great wealth of the people of God before us, and maybe a renewed invitation in this sacred moment to reach out to people and to reach out parish to parish. You know, this is a great little example that parishes talking to other parishes can lift up and share great ideas. And hopefully we can continue to just to network with one another here in the Archdiocese of Washington and hopefully in parishes across the country and the globe.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Ashley. And thank you, Father Ken, for your wonderful presentation. As you can see on the screen, there is another webinar in this sort of accompaniment during COVID-19 series happening next Tuesday with Jonathan Lewis. So if you liked hearing him talk, he'll be a presenter next week as well, in addition to Catholic Policy Center Director Father Frank and Dr. Susan Timney of the Catholic University of America. We welcome you to attend or listen to the video afterwards. This presentation has been recorded, so if you would like to share this after it is published on our website and shared with the Archdiocese of Washington, feel free to do so. It is a free resource to share and to use. As all things, if you could please follow or go to CatholicApostleCenter.org or follow us on any sort of social media, that'd be gratefully appreciated to help spread the gospel. And may the charity of Christ urge us on.